Hi, I'm Albert Cantu. Who are you?
I'm Andrew King. Who are you?
I'm Gabe Vogel.
And welcome to another episode of the High and Low Podcast, where each week we discuss the filmography of a director whose works are relevant today. They've got a movie coming out, and this week the filmmaker in question is Broadway Danny Boyle. In conjunction with his new film, Steve Jobs. Okay, so Andrew, you want to start us off with your high and low?
Yeah, so in preparation for this, I went back and rewatched quite a few Danny Boyle movies, caught up on some ones that I hadn't seen before, but I really didn't think that factored into my decision that much for what my favorite movies of his were, as I think my favorite Danny Boyle movie is still gotta be Trainspotting from 1996. This was his second film, and this follows a group of young heroin addicts as they kind of live out their lives in somewhere in Scotland. Do you know what city it is?
Yeah, it escapes me. I'm not really sure what it is.
I'm not sure. Maybe
Gosh.
It's either Edinburgh or Glasgow. It has to be. Anyway, it's kind of a story with them about them both dealing with their addiction in different ways, and also just kind of a really interesting character study on this group of people. Or this section of the population that people don't really think about, of these like hardcore drug addicts. And it's got some really dark comedy moments in it. I think it's the best, or it's the example of a Danny Boyle movie that works for me stylistically the best out of all of his films. I think he has a very distinctive visual style that we'll talk about a little bit later. But I think as a result of that, a lot of his movies seem to be kind of over-edited or over-directed for my taste. But I think Trainspotting really hits that sweet spot, and it's got such a great screenplay as well. Yeah, I really just think it's like the culmination of all of his work, which is unfortunate because it happened so early in his career. So that would definitely be my favorite one. What about you, Gabe?
Yeah, I'd have to agree. Trainspotting is by far his best film. I think the gritty underbelly of the drug world really goes well with his kind of style, which is very surreal and quick paced. Seems almost inspired by the drug experience. It really works well, and I mean just the acting and the characters are so quirky and fascinating to watch. Yeah, I don't know. It's just kind of perfect. I mean, it takes his style and really pairs it with a great subject matter.
Yeah, I think the ensemble cast is really helpful for this film as well, because it kind of lets Danny Boyle do a lot of these kind of weirder stylistic scenes that he wants to do, in the form of little vignettes that don't really break up the story. So it doesn't really draw attention to itself in ways like it does in some of his other films, particularly Trance. That's the one that I really always think of when I think of like the Danny Boyle visual style being incredibly distracting. Like, I understand that that's sort of the point of that film. It's kind of a, I don't even know how to describe it really.
Style over
It almost feels
substance.
like sort of like a trashy, like 60, like 70s or 80s movie, if you know what I mean. It's like just this psychological thriller that has just way too much going on in it. And that's the one where I really see the like super overuse of the characteristic Boyle like fast camera movements and Dutch angles and things like that he loves so much. But yeah, I think part of what makes Trainspotting so great is the reserve that he shows, because that's clearly not something that he
You know
always does.
what I thought was also very interesting with Trainspotting was, in many ways, it's as much about him getting away from his addiction as it is him getting away from his shitty friends, or just the lifestyle he's grown up under, which is just very unhealthy for trying to create a real life for yourself.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. And I think it speaks to kind of a broader audience in that way, because clearly this isn't a group of people who any of the filmgoers, I think, are supposed to identify with. But I still think you do. I think that a lot of the characters' kind of like motivations and the feelings they're going through, even though there's this like emphasis on the only thing that any of them care about is doing heroin, I think they're still like very lovable and relatable characters who sort of each have their own set of problems that I think people can really latch on to. Yeah, so it's really just a great film about young people, I think.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and definitely one that I, you know, I loved all throughout high school and college, and it really stuck with me then. But I think it really still holds weight now.
Definitely.
All right, Albert, what's your number one?
Yeah, you know, I just have to echo everyone else's sentiments on Trainspotting. Just a big fan of just sort of the anarchic, you know, fun, but also very dark tone. And, you know, I want to compare it a lot to a film we talked about on another episode of High and Low, and that was Nolan's Memento. And that's, it's sort of divergent structurally from a lot of conventional movies. But for the same reason, that's why it sticks in your mind, even after the, you know, 10, 15 plus movies that are also in Danny Boyle's filmography. And I loved it, you know, just from the great energetic ensemble cast's performance and the electro, you know, trance soundtrack and stuff. Interesting note, I just found out from my sources, the author of the book Trainspotting, Irvine Welsh, made a cameo appearance in the film Trainspotting as the drug dealer Mickey Forrester, who gave what's his name?
The guy who's like taking care of all them?
He gave Ewan McGregor the suppositories.
I see.
Yeah.
Ah, interesting.
So a bit of a a bit of a treat for you trivia fans, but yeah, I mean, just a really, really fun movie, really memorable. It's just got that, yeah, as Andrew said before, it's one of those examples where Danny Boyle's like signature editing and like just sort of energetic directing style really fits with the form and content of the movie, and just it really creates that frenetic sort of,
it's manic almost,
yeah, anxious manic, that
it's like it creates this like feeling of off the railsness that you get from like getting over consumed by drugs in many ways. So yeah, it's very fitting.
Are you speaking from experience?
No, I mean, like, I mean, if you're always like in some other state of mind, it can easily take you out of reality, you know.
Sure, I mean, it's all about warped perceptions, and
yeah, exactly.
Just these characters struggling to figure out what's real and what's not, as their perception is so narrowed by their struggle to like get more smack.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's about it for my high, I guess.
Yeah, so I think for the sake of diversity here, you guys can if you want to. I know I wanted to talk about another movie.
That's the only time that phrase has been edited aired on this podcast, for the sake of diversity.
Well, that might be true. But yeah, because I kind of expected all of us to pick Trainspotting. I think it is kind of heads and shoulders above the rest of his filmography. It's truly something special. And I really don't think he's ever reached that height before, or reached that height again since. But the other movie that I wanted to talk about just briefly was the one that came out recently, actually, Steve Jobs, which I think is very much on the other end of the spectrum for Boyle. Visually, it has almost none of these, you know, signature Danny Boyle touches. I think there's like one little moment throughout the film where he does something kind of interesting and surreal visually, but I think for the rest of it, it's a pretty standard, you know, just like well-shot backstage drama. He's not really trying to do too much with the directing for it. But that's another film that I actually really enjoyed, and it's the one we saw recently, and the one that we're doing this podcast in honor of. And I think it's a really good film. I'm not sure how you guys felt about it. I think it's much less a Danny Boyle film than it is kind of a Sorkin and Fassbender vehicle. I think both of them are kind of the stars of the movie. Sorkin with his, you know, very snappy dialogue and, I guess reference or fast paced reference humor that he seems to love so much. And I think Michael Fassbender is just an absolute front runner for best actor this year. He's fantastic in this movie. So in some ways, it almost feels weird to include it as a Danny Boyle movie because I feel like it isn't really his. Hmm. But that's also a film that I have quite a bit of love for.
I mean, yeah. I get what you're saying, but I don't really think that's fair to say that it's not his movie. I mean,
yeah.
While I do agree, I definitely think that Sorkin's contribution was like a major boost for it. It's like you can tell like Danny Boyle's love for the subject matter and, you know, his, I mean, I guess obsession, as a lack of a better word, for sort of the character of Steve Jobs. And it's really interesting with these sort of like larger than life characters. I remember walking out of the theater going, you know, I'm glad it just didn't spend the whole time sucking Steve Jobs' dick.
Yeah, definitely.
But at the same time, I mean, I think that a lot of that had to do with Danny Boyle and his steering the film in a particular direction and saying, I want this, I want X, Y, and Z to be traded this way, I want the familial relations to be tense, and I want the overarching plot to really revolve around Steve and his daughter, with all these things revolving around that.
Yeah, also I felt like, I mean, his kinetic, like, a million miles an hour style is still definitely present in Steve Jobs.
Yeah,
absolutely. See, I just don't think that's the case. I think there's really small glimpses of it throughout, but I think on a whole, there's a few of those kind of signature stylistic elements, the Dutch angles like we talked about, and the really like quick pans around. But I think other than that, there's also the scene where he puts the little rocket ship on the wall. But I think other than that, it just seemed like compared to his typical film.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely missing the surreal elements that you get in a lot of Danny Boyle's films, or like the more on the nose, like visual stuff that he does. I feel like, yeah, it's definitely a Danny Boyle film. It's just, I mean, I feel like Sorkin's dialogue even amps up the speed of it compared to his other stuff, because, like, yeah, Sorkin is also known for his very quick talking characters, very smart people, like basically like combating each other with their minds. And I felt like, yeah, Danny Boyle's like fast style is like really complimentary to that in it. Yeah, I don't know. I definitely got that vibe from it.
Yeah, that's a good thing you brought up, Gabe, that they work very well together, because if you'll remember, one of those things that Sorkin did in The Social Network was intercut those scenes of the courtroom all throughout the movie to like raise the tension, in just the same way as he did with this movie, where we cut back and forth between past and present, with Steve and Woz in their garage just talking about things that have a direct impact on the present as they're like unfolding for the audience. And I think in that respect they work really great together, their dialogue and the structure, and Boyle's like naturalistic, like frenetic editing.
Yeah, see, I just think that it's so telling though as to what I'm trying to say in the comparison between this and a film like The Social Network, which is also another Aaron Sorkin vehicle, where I just felt the presence of David Lynch in that movie so much in comparison.
David Fincher.
I apologize. That would have been a very
I would have
interesting
liked
movie
to see that David Lynch movie.
It's David Fincher in that movie, in comparison with Steve Jobs, where maybe it is just the nature of the film, but this movie is a lot of people walking and talking, essentially. That's really all there is
that's
going
Sorkin's
on the
thing.
Entire film. Yeah, and it is Sorkin's whole shtick that he's made a career on. But I just don't think, maybe there just wasn't enough room within
you
this
sound
film.
Like really derogatory when you say that. Like what, that's his whole thing, you know what he does.
It doesn't work for everyone. Certainly, I happen
yeah,
to be
some people find
a fan
it
of his. Yeah, but there are a lot of Sorkin detractors out there.
I happen to like his style. I like it a lot. Yeah, I think very interesting structurally and very interesting to watch.
I agree.
I mean, he's also won 2 Oscars.
Oh no, I mean that's true. I'm not trying to.
He's 2 for 2 at this point, right?
Yeah, but going back to what I was saying, yeah, maybe just the nature of Steve Jobs, and because there's so much that he wants the character to say within this film, it just didn't allow enough breathing room for Danny Boyle to do. It felt a little bit forced, like he was trying to insert himself into the film just any chance he got. There were a couple of little touches that, now thinking back on it, that I did like. The film is centered around these 3 product launches, and each of the product launches was actually on a different like film stock. I'm not sure if you guys picked up on that.
Yeah,
I didn't.
Within the film, the first one looks like a movie from the 70s. Just because it's of the really grain, pretty, though, that... the grain and the noise in the film.
Oh yeah, yeah. Now that that does make sense. Yeah, I also like the structure of the film, like the way that it was kind of centered around these product launches, these very high stress moments in his career, where everything is kind of riding on the line on his ability to just be Steve Jobs on everybody, you know, like just be that magnetic personality, that larger than life persona that he's created. I felt that was really a really great way of telling the story.
I did find it really funny though that they constantly had these big overblown conversations in hallways full of people and like across auditoriums and stuff.
Oh yeah, man.
Yeah, like just pull him into a room. Like you don't have to scream like in front of God and country.
Nah, man. I feel like Steve Jobs would have done that though, just to like scare people.
I don't know. I mean, yeah, maybe. I'm not sure.
He was all about using his image as like a weapon.
That's true, but I do agree with Albert, where it felt more like those conversations were out of the need for necessity of not just cutting like, back and forth between two characters' faces in a room for the entire movie.
It was just, it struck me like sort of like just to ramp up the drama a little bit more than actually something practical. Totally.
Yeah, totally. I agree. Yeah, so I'm kind of surprised that I know the movie's gotten some mixed reviews, but I'm glad to hear that all of you also liked it.
Mm-hmm. You know, Andrew, I was going to ask you, I mean, you mentioned your points about sort of him trying to make himself shown wherever he gets an opportunity, but maybe he's just like matured as a filmmaker and become a little bit more restrained.
See, well, where I'm coming from is I think that as a follow-up to Trance, his most recent movie, I find that a little bit difficult to believe because that movie, more than anything else he's ever made, is just so unbelievably like frenetic, and it like the camera never stops moving. Like there's never a dull moment within the movie, which I don't think is necessarily to its credit. It is a movie I like. It has like a certain pulpy sensibility to it that I actually found pretty charming. Did you feel that way also, Gabe?
Trance? Yeah, I mean it has a lot of style, and I enjoy it for that style. And I can enjoy the ride that he takes you on because, yeah, he's just, that movie's like a bullet train almost.
Yeah.
But,
I'll go for it.
But, yeah, it has a lot of problems. It's a bullet train which is falling apart as it enters the station.
Yeah, it seems like a complete 180 from that to then go back to Jobs.
Yeah, but maybe you could just say that he learned something from that movie, which it seems like he did, you know?
Yeah, that's true. Maybe a little bit more diversity in his in the kind of films that he can tackle.
Buzzwords.
Twice.
I know.
Was there any other movies you guys wanted to talk about for your highs?
Speaking of diversity, Slumdog Millionaire.
Oh, yes.
So, I am not the biggest fan of that film, but you can go ahead.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Personally, I can totally see why people would have a problem with this film. It's like, it's kind of Disney almost in its like fairy tale sensibilities, but it's also I think like a very well executed rags to riches kind of story, set in India, which is something you don't usually see in film, to be honest, especially English films. And I think it's just very well pulled off. It's a beautiful film to watch. I mean, it has all those visual tricks that he's known for in the quick pace, maybe a bit too cliche at times, for sure.
I think you make some good points for it. I don't think it's a bad movie. I think it just rubbed me the wrong way a little bit, and it's almost difficult to articulate why. It felt like it I think you actually kind of hit the hammer on the head where or hit the nail on the head where it is this almost like Disney sensibility to the world of like, oh, India is this magical place. And even though there are some dark moments in the film, I feel like largely those are overshadowed by characters doing things like performing impromptu musical numbers or dance numbers at the end of the film.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think that one's up there. I think by no means is it his worst movie, but just for me personally. I couldn't really put that up there with Steve Jobs or Trainspotting.
Okay, well, great. With that, why don't we move on to our lows for Danny Boyle's filmography. Gabe, you want to start us out?
Yeah, well, honestly, yeah, my low would have to be The Beach. And honestly, I'm just, like, amazed at this film. Like, I'm amazed that Danny Boyle made it, to be honest. I'm amazed that it's written by the same guy who wrote...
It's based on a novel that Alex Garland wrote. So, yeah. So I'm gonna blame the screenwriter on that one.
True. So maybe that explains it, because this film is just, it's so confused about what it wants to be. It's half like Apocalypse Now, half like Vacation, ultimate vacation movie. It just has absolutely no idea what it wants to be. And while DiCaprio, like, I think he does a lot with what he's given, but I don't know. I can
definitely agree with you there. It feels like a blending of like Blue Lagoon and Apocalypse Now, like you said. It's just so confused about what it's trying to do, because it's trying to do everything. There is just way too much plot in this movie, sort of, but not a lot seems to happen. It's a really bad film. I think that's the only way to say it. And there's all these pretty really much. Goofies, kind of late, really goofy late 90s effects going on throughout the film. There's a sequence where Leonardo DiCaprio, which I actually thought was somewhat effective, was trying to started to lose his sanity in the jungle. Which then they just intercut with him running through the woods with little video game icons popping up around him. And it just took any positive thing the movie was trying to do and completely got rid of it.
I don't know. I think that could have been interesting if there was actually any weight to the idea of DiCaprio going insane. Because honestly, I just felt like that it just made absolutely no sense. Like,
yeah, no, it's a movie with just honestly so many problems. Almost nothing works in it, but it's also just way too self-serious. Like throughout the entire movie, it just, all Leonardo DiCaprio's character does is, you know, wax philosophically about the nature of the world and about his position and what this beach and this island means to him. And it all just comes off as really goofy more than anything.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So for Milo, it actually isn't The Beach. I think that movie is so self-serious and so goofy that it's actually almost a little bit endearing.
I just found it offensive.
I can totally see where you're coming from. But I didn't actually have a miserable time watching it, is how I would describe it. Where on the other end, the movie he made previous to that, his third feature, that's my least favorite, and that is A Life Less Ordinary. This is one starring Ewan McGregor and Cameron Diaz. I believe he is a janitor, and she is some kind of heiress to a fortune. And he ends up kidnapping her, and she basically devises a scheme to try to ransom herself for money. And this movie it has a lot of the same problems as The Beach, where it's just really overly goofy and has that 90s element to it that isn't really charming, if that makes sense.
It definitely tries to be, though.
Yeah, but this one is just trying so much to be a very cutesy, like, romance story. It also has this whole element where a couple of kind of bumbling angels are sent down to make sure these two fall in love. And it's so saccharine that I just can't even stand like watching it. This is the movie of his that I really wanted to turn off while I was going back through it. There was one that fortunately I hadn't seen before, so I didn't have to rewatch. I think this is by far the worst movie he's made, and I'm glad that he's strayed away from that type of subject material in the future. I think he does still have a bit of a problem with being over sentimental at times. I think even the ending of Steve Jobs shows that, and pretty much the entirety of Millions. Oh,
yeah. Slumdog Millionaire.
Yeah, Millions and Slumdog Millionaire both feature that a lot, but nothing to the extreme that this was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I pretty much agree with you in a lot of ways. I find it less offensive than The Beach because it actually seems to know what it wants to be, even if it's pretty obnoxious in its existence. But I don't know, like, even though it's like way over trying to be charming, it's at least trying to be charming and not trying to be the next Apocalypse Now, which I can live with.
That's true. I mean, that really is what the beach is going for.
Yeah, exactly. And that's just such a disaster in that regard. But yeah, it's definitely just an incredibly stupid, silly movie. It's very cliche and has Cameron Diaz in it.
She's actually not
as obnoxious as she could have been.
Yeah, not nearly the worst thing about it.
Yeah.
Albert, what about you? What's your least favorite? What's your low?
Well, my low for Danny Boyle is actually 128 days.
127 days later.
As he fights the zombie apocalypse.
28 days later on. And this is my lowest pick because two reasons, really. This movie is so poorly edited, I have a really, really difficult time even comprehending what's going on. And secondly, it's incredibly dull. Everything from character interactions to general plotting to climax is just the worst. It makes me want to surgically remove my eyeballs and throw them into a jar full of acetone. I couldn't watch them dissolve at that point because they're my eyeballs, but I would have someone, a friend or a colleague, stand next to me and describe what the scene looks like. And that, I think, is a great analogy for what 28 Days Later did to me psychologically.
Okay, I have a question for you, Albert. When did you see 28 Days Later?
Oh gosh, it was years ago.
Did you see it when it came out, or did you see it like later?
No, it wasn't in 2002. It was probably, I don't know, 2010 maybe.
Yeah, see, I think I saw it around when it came out, and I definitely appreciate it because I appreciate it more on the level that it brings a lot of new ideas. Or some new ideas to the zombie films.
Problem is that they're all terrible ideas.
I guess.
I'll tell you what was a great idea was George Romero's Dawn of the Dead. What a terrible idea was to remake that same film in 2004.
I actually like the Zack. I'm going to defend the Zack
and have it directed by a hack fraud director named Hack Effing Snyder.
But wait, my point is like...
you had a point?
Yeah, is that like... Okay, sure. Ever since this movie has come out, it's been ripped off in so many different ways by so many different zombie movies.
It's true.
Especially like the worst offender is probably The Walking Dead, where they literally take the opening scene from 28 Days Later and recycle it.
What was the opening scene? Remind me.
Waking up in the hospital.
Oh, yeah, right.
Which I think is a cool idea. Personally, I think that's a new thing that was pretty interesting that this movie brought. But my main problem with this film is it's absolutely a horrible ending where it just like completely falls apart in the last third, which is a consistent problem with Danny Boyle's
works. Yeah, I
absolutely
agree with you.
Especially the Alex Garland.
This movie was execrable.
Yeah, especially the Alex Garland films like Sunshine in this film.
I agree.
Like, the last thirds of those movies are just horrible.
Do we blame this debacle on Alex Garland, who has apparently had his lobotomy done before writing the film? Or do we blame it on Daniel Boyle?
Well, he did write The Beach, so I'm going to blame Alex Garland.
No, you know, I
Let's
don't...
blame Alex Garland and the editor of 28 Days Later.
No, I mean, I think this movie has like some interesting ideas in it. I am also of the opinion that it's not a very good movie. I think it gets much more acclaim than it deserves just because it did restart this zombie genre for better or worse. You know, there have been good zombie films made since then, but you know, do we really want this to be such an integral part of popular culture? I'm not really sure. I don't necessarily think we need to blame someone for
I do.
It's bad.
Quit being such a pacifist. Let your aggression out.
Get the burning stake.
No, and you know, if anything, if you are going to blame Alex Garland for it, if anything, I would say it's a learning experience. I think he's doing good work now. I'm not sure if you guys saw his most recent movie that he actually directed as well, Ex Machina.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was substantially better. So maybe it is a problem of them working together.
Yeah, it seems like both of them are actually doing better now that that partnership has ended. I've liked both of their movies substantially more.
See, speaking of this, though, like, I really, on another note, though, like, I really, really like what he was doing in the beginning of Sunshine. Like, if that movie didn't have a horrible third act, like, I think it could have been my favorite. Like, just the opening and the ideas that he brings in that film.
Yeah, but, that movie is another one of those ones where they just, it's kind of a slow, methodical, plotting sci-fi movie, and then all of a sudden they just cut the brakes on you and...
Yeah, turn it into a monster movie.
To start throwing crazy things and trying to jam themes into the end of the movie. It definitely goes off the rails at the end there. You know, who knows? Maybe his movies are getting better, and maybe there's still some great Danny Boyle movies yet to come.
I think so. I'm excited to see Porno. So.
Oh, yeah, which is, for those of you who don't know, the official title of the sequel to Trainspotting. Mm-hmm. I'm mostly just excited for 28 weeks, months later? I think it's months later.
Is 28 that next years one? Later?
No, 28 months later is also sort of confirmed, I think. People have been talking about that happening.
Is it? It's going to be him?
I don't think he's directing it.
Oh, okay. Well, then I don't care.
Okay, I think that just about wraps up our discussion of the high and low points of Broadway Danny Boyle's filmography. But before we go, why don't we move into a segment that we like to call Watch These Movies, You Complete Cretins. Andrew, you want to start us off?
Well, a little bit blindsided by that one. So real quickly, there is one Danny Boyle movie we didn't talk about that I would like to recommend, and that is the 2012 Olympics. Wow. So if you haven't seen the 2012 Olympics, Danny Boyle also directed that, and I thought they were quite good.
Yeah, tonally weird, but I'd say it's worth it. Worth the shot.
Yeah, so my movie recommendation for this week, I'm actually going to recommend a contemporary film that's in theaters right now. And the film is called Room, not to be confused with The Room, which I know there's also a substantial amount of love for that movie on this podcast. Definitely a different movie, though. The one I'm talking about is just the called Room. Room. It's directed by Lenny Abramson and stars Brie Larson and Jacob Tremblay, I think is how you pronounce his last name, who is a previously unknown child actor. And I don't really want to say too much about this film in fear of spoiling it, but it's playing in theaters right now, and I would highly recommend all of you go check it out. It's a hugely emotional film, and it's really difficult to watch, actually. But I think both Brie Larson and the child actor in this movie are incredible. Basically, it's the story of the two of them as you slowly start to realize that they're trapped inside of a single room, being held captive by some man who had kidnapped her some number of years ago. But yeah, I think this movie is absolutely fantastic. I think it's one of the best movies I've seen all year. Mm-hmm. I think that both it and Brie Larson will probably have some Oscar consideration coming their way when it's time for that. So that is Room. Go check it out in your local art house theater, probably.
Well, my recommendation for this week would have to be The Kingdom of Dreams and Madness, which is a documentary film about Hayao Miyazaki, the Japanese animation director, most famous for films like Spirited Away or Totoro. And yeah, it's just like a great documentary, just goes into his studio, Ghibli. Looks at the process of the making of his most recent and last film, The Wind Always Wind Rises, I think, yeah. And, goes just interviews him a ton, and if you're at all interested in him, it's a great, great film to watch. And, very interesting guy for sure.
Yeah, I'll definitely check that out. I'm always interested in movies about filmmakers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't want to do a recommendation. I'll just end it there. Well, thanks a lot for your recommendations, guys. I'll be sure to check both of those out. Probably never. But I think that'll just about do it for us today. I've been Albert Cantu. Here with me, Andrew L. Ray King.
Yeah, I guess that's me.
And Gabe the G-Man Vogel.
Hey.
We'll see you next time.